Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Oh, am I on? I'm doing vocal exercises. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I told you about the vocal exercises I saw a young man do when I was doing book tours years ago. I don't do them because I'm lucky in that I have one range and it seems to work. The big news, of course, is the fall of the Wiener seat. You know, Wiener's district was supposed to go to another Democrat. It is in Brooklyn and Queens, and it's been Democrat since 1923. And lo and behold, along comes a Republican who is in favor of Israel, was anti-gay marriage. And the district, which was lock-sure Democrat, votes in a Republican in a sweep. Now, you don't read this in your local papers across America. This should have been headline news. Instead, I was shocked when I woke up today. I couldn't find anything about it. Instead, MSNBC, more snotty nonsense by communists, had a segment entitled, "How Good a Person Are You?" CNN, the Crescent News Network, was talking about Rick Perry meeting with Donald Trump. Fox News wouldn't cover it. They had a segment on a children's toy. I've never seen anything like this. This is a major league story, the fall of the Democrat in Wiener's district. He was defeated by a liberal Republican. This is a seat that's been held by Dems since 23, and it was by a landslide. The Republican won by 8 points. In our environment today, that's a landslide. Now, I wouldn't draw a national conclusion from this race for a couple of reasons. This district, while it's extremely liberal and Democrat and has been since before Moses was a baby, is largely Jewish and Orthodox Jewish at that. And that's not what America is. America is not largely Orthodox Jewish. Okay? That's number one. But the Orthodox Jews were disenchanted with Obama because of his Israel bashing. They realized, finally, they woke up to what I've been telling them for years, that this entire cabal of the Obama administration goes all the way back to Jimmy Carter. They're Jew haters. They're Israel haters. And there's no way to disguise that. It's as clear as a bell. All you got to do is look at what they've done. They've surrounded Israel. So, all right, so the Orthodox Jews voted in that manner. I wouldn't jump to the conclusion, therefore, that Obama's finished, because I've told you Obama is much smarter than you may think, and his machine is more vicious than you could ever imagine. That's the big story. Of course, I'm going to tell you what happened with the book on the first day. You know you want to know, so I'll tell you. I'm moving more back to politics with a little bit about my book, Abuse of Power. You went out yesterday. You went to the bookstores yesterday. You did what I asked you to yesterday, and the sales went through the roof. My publisher is jumping up and down. My agent is jumping up and down. And they're telling me, by dint of what happened on the first day yesterday, and the numbers, in other words, the numbers were so good yesterday in sales that had the sales that occurred yesterday in one day been sales for the entire week last week, the book would have been number three on the New York Times bestseller list just from the one-day sale. So they're pretty optimistic that when the whole week is over and you've gone and finally bought the book, if you can still find it, it will be way up there in the top three, which for a new writer of fiction, they consider to be a miracle, incidentally. It's a miracle, and they say it's miraculous. Very rarely have they seen the transition made. Let me add my congrats, said the publisher, but to put the first-day sales in perspective, this one-day sale will put us at number six compared to full-week sales of hardcover fiction from last week, so onward and upward. And then another one of my editors said, for a first novel, even one by a celebrity and best-selling nonfiction author, to debut with this extraordinary momentum is amazing. Here's to Michael Savage. And, of course, Jack Hatfield now, they're going to ask me to write a sequel to it. And I say, oh, God, I don't know. But let Hatfield enjoy this venture first. stopping the next 9/11 in San Francisco. Let the people see the movie first, and then we'll worry about the next sequel to Abuse of Power. I already know where he's going to be. In fact, I started the book in my head. You know, I told you of the making of many books, there is no end. Ecclesiastes wrote that, I think, right? Didn't Ecclesiastes say that? He was, you know, Ecclesiastes was an unpublished Hebraic author of biblical times. He got to write a little bit in the Bible. That's about it. But he never had a bestseller on the Jerusalem bestseller list. No one ever heard of him. You know, they gave him a chisel and they gave him some marble, and that's all you heard of him. One of his pieces wound up in the Big Ten. If you live in New York, if you live in Wiener's district, who really zinged them up pretty good, and you have an opinion on the victory of the Republican over the shoo-in Democrat, this is a huge story. I'd like you to call me at 1-800-449-8255. And I'd also like to hear about your bookstore experiences, if they're interesting. I'm not just going to say we went in and we bought it, because that's not good radio. Good radio would be something of interest that happened with the Abuse of Power. And I really would like to read a few more pieces from the book, because I'm actually enjoying reading it on the air. You know why I'm enjoying reading it on the air? You say, yeah, okay, because you're promoting the book. That's not the reason. I remember years ago, 20 years ago, there used to be on NPR a guy who would read from novels on the air. And I used to drive around in the car. I used to enjoy sitting and listening to him. I didn't even know what book he was reading from. But there was something soothing about hearing a story being read that came through a car speaker. So without giving away plot points, let me show off with various sections from Michael Savage's book, Abuse of Power. I don't know what I'm going to read. We'll see. There's no F words in the book. No S words. There are no F words. I didn't have to revert to Showtime or HBO level to get people to read the book. You know, I don't know why everyone thinks they have to say F this and F that. Why do you have to say it? What, do you have to pretend you're an illiterate rap star from South Jamaica in order for people to listen to you? You know, get over it already. They're in the past. They're not in the future. America's moving so far to the right so fast, you're not even going to watch their skirts fly in the wind. New York, WOR. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, Dr. Savage, you are a great prophet, a man of the living God of Israel. I want to thank you so much for your book. I got a date because of you from this beautiful lady who asked me what I needed help with. I said, I'm looking for Dr. Savage's new book. And she says, I'm buying this book for you, because if you're a friend of Dr. Savage, you're a friend of mine. And I got a date with this woman because...
Wait. Hold it. She was a bookstore clerk or another customer?
A worker in there. She's gorgeous.
You got a date with a bookstore clerk in a liberal bookstore by asking for my book?
Well, she's not a liberal. She is a lover of the Dr. Savage and a lover of the God of Israel.
And she works in a bookstore? That's almost oxymoronic.
No, God works in mysterious ways. I got a date because of you, Dr. Savage, and the God of Israel lives.
Tom, let me ask you. Tom, this is a great story, but okay, two questions. How old are you?
I am 42 years old, doctor.
And how old is the girl, the lady?
I'd probably say between 40 and 45. I didn't ask her.
All right. Would you consider yourself a good-looking guy?
I probably would say, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to just say humbly 5, in the middle. I don't want to say yes or no. I'm just a 5 average man.
And how what's your height, for example?
5'10".
Okay. And are you bald or still have some hair?
I've got a lot of gray hair like you. I am a New Yorker. I was born in Bellevue Hospital, New York City, 1968.
Okay, very interesting. I was born in a hospital on 2nd Avenue and 17th Street, incidentally. I have a question for you again now. The girl, is she really beautiful, or you just see her as beautiful?
Dr. Savage, look, I've been listening to you for a long time, and she's Jewish, too, which even makes it more even nicer. Okay?
So that's what I was going to ask you. Are you a religious Jewish person?
Sorry?
Are you a religious Jewish person?
I'm not Jewish, but I love the God of Israel. I have two Irish.
Oh, you had a real crossover there.
But I love the God of Israel.
So you're not walking around in the garb, in other words?
No, I walk around in regular linen clothes like the prophet Elijah.
I thought maybe you were like an Orthodox guy, went in a bookstore, and she turned out to be, you know, from an Orthodox family, and you met that way. So this is a very interesting story. Well, what can I tell you? I wish you very good luck. I hope that you fall in love and get married and have many babies. And I'm sending you today and anyone who gets on the air today a copy of Abuse of Power. Thank you for that call. Good. We're off to a good start. We're off to a good start. You know, earlier today, I did an interview with the ex-governor, Dave Patterson, you know, former governor of New York, David Patterson. He happens to now have a talk show on WOR that precedes me right on, you know, on locally in New York on these airwaves. The interview went so well. I mean, he's a liberal Democrat. I am not a liberal Democrat. I don't know how to define myself, but I'm not a liberal Democrat. Let's put it to you that way. I would say that I'm a borders, language, culture patriot. I can't define myself any other way than that. I'd like to see America's respect and honor restored. And I think the only way to do that is to reemphasize borders, language, and culture, which is the mantra that I've used on radio from day one. Even liberals who I know, I mean, pot-smoking grown men liberals have said to me, you know what? Politically, I may not agree with most of what you say, but I believe we need to reassert our borders, our language, and our culture. So that, I mean, that's the appeal. So anyway, I was on Patterson's show, and the interview was supposed to be 8 minutes. It ran about 10, 12 minutes because we got into politics about this issue in Brooklyn and Queens in Weiner's old seat, and then about Obama. I am going to give you a real treat on this show. Later on in the next hour, we're going to replay that interview. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Okay, here's the thing. People keep saying to me in interviews, how did you make the jump from nonfiction to fiction? It's an interesting question. They think that it can't be done. And why did you do it? And I've covered some of this. But the thing is this. I've been a wordsmith virtually all of my adult life. I've always been able to take words and make things out of words. It's that simple. For example, I joked around and I said the Obama doctrine is the following. See something, tax something. Now, that's very funny. But I guarantee you it'll be stolen before it leaves my mouth. It'll be on 10 radio shows tomorrow. They'll say they invented it. You know that I invent phrases on this show. So therefore, if you're inventive enough, it means that you have novel phrases. The word novel means just that. It means unique. Novel. That's what a novel is supposed to be. Unique. Different. So my story in Abuse of Power is different. It's new. Nobody has ever written a story about a man being banned in Britain because he was unfairly smeared by a Soviet-style smear machine funded by some shady Austrian emigre who instituted Nazi-like policies by funding journalists and hate groups who hate conservatives and Americans. But this novel takes that true story and fictionalizes it. You get it? And that's why it's going to take the world by storm. See something, tax something. There's another thing you have to know. I have a doctorate in epidemiology and human nutrition from the University of California at Berkeley. It's a real degree. So I'm very analytical. I'm going to give you an example. Here's an article that just came out. Chocolate as good for you as exercise. Most of you are going to rush out and buy chocolate when if you actually understood this as being funded by the chocolate industry for reasons I'll explain to you, you'll understand when I say I can analyze things, why you can't analyze this. And I can because I have a background in science. Here, I'll read the article. Scientists found that small amounts of dark chocolate may improve health in a similar way to exercise. The researchers focused on the mitochondria, the tiny powerhouses and cells that generate energy, and discovered that a plant compound found in chocolate called epicatechin appeared to stimulate the same muscle response as vigorous activity. Okay, good. So therefore what? You should go out and eat chocolate, which is filled with sugar, and chocolate, which is filled with milk and milk fat? No, the fact is that it's the epicatechin that stimulates the muscle response, not the chocolate per se. And so therefore, I'm not going to go out and eat chocolate. I don't want the sugar and I don't want the milk and the milk fat. But you're not going to get that in the article. Instead, because you're an average person who's not a scientist, you're going to read the article, chocolate is good for you as exercise, and you're going to wind up eating chocolate. Okay, I mean, eat it if you want it, but you're getting too much sugar and too much fat from it at that point. It may taste good, but a lot of things feel good that are bad for you, okay? Jeffrey in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
The Orthodox Jewish vote for Bob Turner wasn't so much a referendum on Obama as it was a referendum on David Weprin's vote for gay marriage in New York. So I agree with you in your opening that I don't think this represents a greater trend
Right, absolutely. I can tell you that I believe that to be true. However, having said that, this David Weprin is allegedly an Orthodox Jew. How did he come out and vote for gay marriage if he's supposedly an Orthodox Jew?
He believes that there's a separation of church and state, and he shouldn't place his personal religious beliefs on other people. Right.
He also came out in favor of the Ground Zero Mosque to show you how tolerant he is, which, of course, flies in the face of all common sense to support the building of a mosque at Ground Zero, doesn't it?
Right. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't fault the national news outlets for not saying that this is a greater trend across America, because it isn't.
Well, I didn't say a greater trend, but it's the biggest upset victory I've seen in my political career. I've never seen anything like it. This is a lockshore Democrat district since 1923, and it goes to a Republican? This is one of the biggest stories of politics I've seen recently anyway. You know one that matches it?
But the difference is that this doesn't really mean anything for the future, because if 20% of the
I wouldn't therefore now jump to that conclusion and say it wouldn't mean anything for the bigger picture. I said be cautious, yes, and Obama's a very cagey operative, and so are his people, very, very sinister. But the fact of the matter is, Obama himself, are you saying he's wildly popular amongst that demographic?
No, but I don't think that was the reason why they voted for Bob Turner.
Well, you wouldn't say Obama's anti-Israel policies were ignored, would you?
I don't. Yeah, his policies are certainly anti-Israel, but that wasn't the reason why Orthodox Jews.
Well, I disagree with you, because when Ed Koch, the former mayor, came out, he's a Democrat, and said vote against him because he's anti-Israel. They voted against him because he's anti-Israel. So Israel's playing a much bigger role amongst Jews than people might think, especially in this district. Whether that will play out across America is another story. I think Obama's vulnerable on many other fronts other than Israel. But the fact of the matter is, it is so long until the election. It was so far out that you can't generalize what's going to happen. I see a war brewing in the Middle East. God only knows what Israel's going to have to do when the hordes are unleashed upon them from Iran. Can you believe that the Hitler of Iran is allowed to come to New York and a group of so-called students are going to have lunch or dinner with that vermin, the Hitler of our time? And where is the FBI now that we need them?
Savage.
We need to build an economy that lasts. And Raleigh, that starts now.
I love you,
Barack. I love you back. That starts. But if you love me, you got to help me pass this bill.
See?
If you love me, you got to help me.
Okay, it's enough already. See, isn't that wonderful to have a president who's loved by so many? Very nice to be that popular. His mantra is see something, tax something. If it has a pulse, tax it. Anything that has a pulse should be taxed, according to the Democrats, whether it be an ant or a billionaire. And the day they start taxing General Electric on their U.S. profits is the day I'll believe a word that comes out of their mouths. I want to play a little rock and roll, and I'm entitled, okay? I'm entitled to a little break for all the hard work that I've done. And the one I want to hear right now is that the Shabab Shabab song, I Only Have Eyes For You? Yeah, I want to hear I Only Have Eyes For You.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
South Fallsburg, New York, circa 1956, Plymouth Fury. Actually, there was no Fury in that day, so it was a Plymouth. Rollover, side of the road, six people in various states of injury, some obviously dying. Kid in car going by, passes by as in a bad dream. Okay, it's enough already with the reverie. I was going to go somewhere else with it. I was going to go to Love by a Sewer Plant, but it didn't fit. 1-800-449-8255. I was asking people who were calling the show, why did you buy the book? I had my screener say to them, well, what made you go out and buy the book? I wanted to know, was it something I said? Was it I asked you to do it? Was it that I read From Abuse of Power and you were captivated? Every one of them said I bought the book because I owned his other books and I intended to buy it anyway. So I've reached a point, in other words, where my name, Michael Savage, is a known quantity in the bookstores, and therefore I retire. Good night and good luck. You'll never hear from me again. I'm just going to move to an island and just write books. You'll never hear from me. And I could have done that a long time ago. In fact, I gave up a trip to the Mediterranean this summer. The family was on someone's yacht. I didn't go. They went to Elba. I was told I thought Elba was the most beautiful of all of the islands because there was the least touristy. I stayed here. I stayed on the radio. That's all. I'm struggling with fighting England, you know, and all of that. I don't give up. I don't quit. I'm going to fight England until my name is cleared. I'll tell you right now. Here's a reader review. Let me read it to you and get it over with because it's well written. It's very political. Fast-paced, urgent, atmospheric thriller. One is able to glean upon Mr. Savage's true love and deep concern for this great country and its diminishing freedoms. Meet Jack Hatfield. Meet Michael Savage. Indeed, in true life, Mr. Savage is heroically and bravely the bane of dastardly, destructive political correctness and should be applauded for it. He has paid an unimaginable price but continues to fight on and does not give up, which is quite evident in Abuse of Power. Folks need to keep in mind that Fox News has banished Mr. Savage and refuses to acknowledge him, let alone promote his books and persona. However, the reigning kings and queens of Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and the others, are repeatedly unabashedly promoted. Fair and balanced, they say. It speaks volumes that even lacking the Fox News advantage, Abuse of Power has been catapulted to top the seller list on Amazon, which is quite a feat in itself. Savage has also acknowledged that he does not do book tours or signings, so it is even more telling that his books sell on their own merit. He is obviously proud of his work, and most importantly, he is trying to get America's attention with regard to those nefarious beings who are abusing their power and are hell-bent on destroying a great nation. First Savage on a banned list. It could be you next. We have been forewarned. Very beautiful review. Somebody wrote on Amazon.com. I don't know who wrote it, but I agree. Another one said, this book is very well written. To quote Hemingway, it's a good read. It's got to be a good story. No one will read it. That's all. I want to have another piece of rock and roll. How about Party Doll by Buddy Knox, which is a little better than See Something, Tax Something by Buddy Obama. Let us hear Party Doll by Buddy Knox. Oh, that's a good one. This voice is the quintessential American voice of the period in which I grew up. Do you understand that lanky southeasterner who could knock your head off with one straight right? That kind of guy who's been banished into the hinterlands by all of the metrosexuals and their fellow travelers in the United States of America today? Did I say it clearly? Because that's a good line for the sequel to Abuse of Power. I'm thinking of inventing a character who expresses all of my real opinions. As you well know, you don't really hear what I really believe here on the Savage Nation. What you actually hear is probably 50 to 60% of what I actually believe. You don't really hear the other 40%. I'm thinking of creating a super character for my next novel that who expresses what I say in the privacy of my own home. I mean, when I go crazy, so to speak, and I start blasting the people on television and the politicians who have destroyed this country and have wrecked our honor and have ripped the family apart and produced the salacious filth that comes out of Hollywood, you've really got to hear what I have to say, but I can't say it on the radio. But I think you'll hear it one of these days. A little bit comes out in Abuse of Power, you know? Chicago, Lynn, welcome to the program.
We are so starved for a real patriotic hero and with a real villain. I think it's part of it. But anyway, I have not bought your book yet, Michael, but I work on the northwest part of Chicago, and I got onto the blue line, and two people on my car had your book.
And wow, that's a big percentage of a first day. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And what were the other two reading? The Communist Manifesto by David Axelrod?
Comic books. But the one guy I was able to go, and I went up to him, and I said, hey, LCB. You know, and he kind of looked at me kind of, you know, and I said, language, border, culture. And then, of course, he knew I was a Savage fan. And I said, how is it? And all he looked at me, and he looked down at the book again, three quarters done, he just said, wow. But what was
That's
even
beautiful.
Weirder was the other guy that was reading it, and I didn't get to talk to him. I was watching, he was flipping the pages, but he had a yellow highlighter. And he was highlighting. And I don't know if that was to come after you later or what it was.
Oh, a highlighter, one of those left-wingers. They like to highlight in pink and yellow. It's like Madame Defarge keeping lists.
It was strange, but I can't wait to get it.
Well, I'm sending you a copy anyway. I'm reluctant to read from the book because I think it'll slow the show down, truthfully. And I really don't want to give away the scene. I mean, what I really want to read to you is the sensitive side of Jack, but I don't think that's what I really should read. Oh, I got it. I know what I'm going to do. Let's make it political. Remember 6 months ago, there was a man who built the driving force behind the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And he was a major operative in cybersecurity for America. And he was found wandering around in the streets of Washington, D.C. And then his body was found thrown in a dumpster in Delaware. Remember, in a landfill? Notice how that's been swept under the rug. Can you believe you're living in a free country anymore? Do you believe you're living in a free country anymore? When that story, that death, that man with his prominence has been swept under the rug, you are living in a banana republic. If whoever killed him can get away with that, they can kill any one of us and get away with it, because your mind is distracted by the filth, by the pornography and the sports that they force down your throat like geese being fattened up for your liver. And so therefore, I could not believe that this story had been dropped. So what I did was I fictionalized that character in my book, Abuse of Power, okay? So I'm going to read to you that little setting. So Jack is in his room working on a clock to calm his mind down. And over the years, Jack's interest had expanded from watches to clocks. His father said he'd move backward because clocks were larger and easier to repair. But Jack loved the sound of the bells when they struck on the half and on the hour. Winding one particular wall clock seemed to reset his mind. It was his favorite, a walnut German Berliner made by Kienzel in 1880. The brass face was embossed with a winged angel, the pendulum driven by an eight-day spring-wound movement that played the Westminster chimes on the half hour. Jack often smiled at the irony of being banned from entering Britain as he listened to the harmonious gongs. Okay, so he's working on his clock, so I'm moving along now to page 121. And now he's working on a particular watch. And the watch he's working on is a Hamilton Gilbert, which is, interestingly enough, I went and bought one on the internet, which broke because I overwhelmed it. I had to send it back to the clockmaker. So he's working on this Hamilton Gilbert circa 1952, which was a very popular pocket watch at the time that was often given to employees after a certain number of years of service, blah, blah, blah. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. He's working on his clocks. It was nearly 3 a.m. and the sound startles him when his cell phone rings. Who would be calling him at this time of morning? Setting the watch down, Jack fumbled the phone from his pocket, checked the screen, and saw that the number was blocked. He pressed the receive button, put it on speaker, and placed the phone on the desk. Hello? There was static on the line, followed by a moment of silence. Then a slurred but familiar voice said, "Hatfield, sat you?" Bob Copeland. He sounded as if he might be drunk. "Hatfield, you there?" It was unusual for Copeland to be calling him directly like this. With his penchant for secrecy, their normal mode of communication was a text message, like earlier tonight, and Jack had no doubt that those messages went through half a dozen encryption filters before they reached his phone. "Yeah, Bob, it's me. What's going on? Are you okay?" "What?" The static flared up again, and if Copeland said anything more, Jack missed it. "Bob, did you hear me?" "Can't find my other shoe." "Where the hell is my shoe?" Definitely drunk or even drugged, although Copeland had never struck Jack as a big fan of pharmaceuticals. "Listen to me, Bob. Tell me where you are. Are you at home?" More static. "Bob?" "Upstream, Jackie boy. Definitely upstream. Gotta get out of here. Gotta look after the twins." Jack had no idea what Copeland was talking about, but if he wasn't at home, he definitely shouldn't be driving. "Whatever you do," Jack told him, "don't get behind the wheel. You hear me? Leave your car where it is and call yourself a cab." "What?" "Call a cab, Bob. I mean it. Promise me you won't drive." "No driving," Copeland murmured, his voice sounding distant as if he'd lowered the phone. "Can't find my damn shoe." Jack was about to insist he let him pick him up when the line clicked and the phone went dead. Jack sighed. He knew Copeland and, anyway, you know how this one ends, don't you? Well, I wrote the Copeland character into the book because I am shocked that we live in a nation where a man so high up in the defense establishment who had been working on American cybersecurity could obviously be assassinated and his body unceremoniously thrown into a dumpster, and the media completely ignores the story. We are living in a banana republic. There are no journalists anymore. This story should have been pursued by 10 journalists, let alone 1,000. And it should have been pursued until answers were given, because his widow, the widow of the man who actually got killed and thrown in the dumpster, she himself said, "I can't believe what they're doing. They're covering up his death. Somebody killed my husband." Remember that? Have you seen one story about it since? I haven't. I'd like to see one story about it since. But you're not going to see anything about it. So this is where fiction comes in. We can only imagine who did it to him and why they did it to him. But it doesn't take Albert Einstein to figure out why he was killed. That guy was killed, I believe, because he was, let's put it two and two together. He was working in cybersecurity, right? He also was so prominent in the defense establishment, he was about to blow the whistle on somebody inside the defense establishment who was working for the enemy, who was working for the opposition, and he got killed by them. That's my guess. What would your guess be? What would your guess be? I'll be right back.
Savage.
No, the way.
It is the Savage Nation blasting out across America on 310 stations, 8 to 10 million listeners. That must kill liberals, the people who once were on Air America and flopped. They must eat their hearts out. We're supposed to have disappeared. And now with the success of my novel, it's going to eat. I don't know what they're going to do. They may run to Daddy Obama and ask him to ban conservatives from publishing novels. Maybe they'll ask for a fairness doctrine in novels. And say that's unfair. He has an advantage with radio. And that's why he can push his right wing crap. We want a right to control the dialogue. I mean, we believe in freedom of speech as long as it's our speech and we're free to espouse it. We really do. We truly believe in the First Amendment as long as we control what's said and what's written. We don't want any more of them novels about America. We want to hate America in novels. We want to show every character as an anti-Christian, anti-Jew, anti-Israel type. That's the real America. That's our America.
Yeah, I was in an Indian restaurant yesterday for a buffet. I can't help it. I have a thing with buffets. Yes, I mean, I could eat anywhere, okay, in the most expensive restaurant in town. But I like buffets because I'm a very edgy guy. I don't like to wait for anything. The minute I have to order something, I don't want to eat it. It's like going somewhere. The minute I make a plan to go on a vacation, I don't want to be there anymore. Okay, so it's the way my mind is. It's the same with food. Until you sit down, they give me the menu, and what would you like to eat? I get so tied up. I'd rather stay home and eat leftovers and watch television, meaning the news or a military history channel, whatever I like, a movie. It keeps my mind occupied, right? But if you go to a restaurant, I like to eat right away. In that sense, I'm very Asian. If you go to Japan, I mean, I spent time in Tokyo. I like the Japanese style of eating. You run in, you order, you eat, and you're out. They're busy people. They're very active minds. So anyway, I go to a buffet, and as I'm leaving, I won't talk about the food. I overhear a table in liberal San Francisco. One of them sneers at Christians, and the others laugh. I got so angry, but you know what I decided? I'm not going to say anything. I cannot fight every battle on the planet. It's freedom of speech. These cowards... These pinko left-wing cowards would never say an anti-Muslim thing. They would never say an anti-Buddhist thing, nor an anti-Jewish thing, nor an anti-Hindu thing. But they're very free with their big mouths when it comes to Christians. And you know what it tells me? Christianity has been subverted by the liberals to an extent that it's become a passive religion that threatens to be overrun around the planet. I believe the only way to save this religion of Christianity, which is a wonderful, beautiful religion, is for it to become, first of all, needs to go back to its origins and roots and become a very militant religion. The only way Christianity is going to survive if it becomes a militant religion. You've never heard that because you say, wait a minute, that's crazy. Wasn't the message of Jesus that one of love and one of peace? Well, yes, but one man does not speak for the entire religion. Moreover, I will remind you of something else. I've had theological discussions on this show with biblical scholars. Actually, I don't remember the man's name because I made a similar statement 10 years ago. And I said, how come when a man is on a battlefield, they used to pray? And when a man fell on a battlefield, they used to be able to give him his last rites in his religion. And today, because of the left-wing socialists who've taken over the military, they can't even pray before a battle, going against those who pray against them to Allah. So he said to me, you're absolutely right. He said, Christianity does not prohibit killing your enemies. Not at all. It's a complete perversion of the religion. Incidentally, that's a whole other story. So that story of Jack Wheeler I told you about, if you were to Google Jack Wheeler, or if you do a search on news sites for Jack Wheeler, the man who was unceremoniously assassinated and thrown in a dumpster, there's not been an article published about him since last May. How is that possible? Here is a man high up in the defense establishment. He helped build a Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Where are the Vietnam veterans in this country? Why has the VFW not talked about this? Why isn't every Major League Veterans organization in this country saying we demand to know the truth about Jack Wheeler? Kansas City, Gina, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. Thank you so very much for covering this murder. And I'm honored you took my call, by the way. But is his widow okay? Because
I don't know. You remember his widow came out and said she's shocked by what's going on, how they're trying to cover up the obvious assassination of her husband? I never heard from her afterwards. You're right. Is she okay?
Oh, boy.
Gina, I don't know how far up the conspiracy goes with Jack Wheeler, but I hate to turn it back to my book. Abuse of Power is about a man named Jack Hatfield who finds out that the conspiracy against him goes all the way up the food chain. You get it, Gina?
Yeah, probably does. In this case, too. Well, you wonder.
Yeah, you go. But remember, Wheeler was killed, and he was a major league cybersecurity expert, remember?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And what did he discover about the computers in the Defense Department that he was about to talk about? Didn't he just go to, he had just gone to a meeting in the Justice Department in Washington before he was found dead, wandering around. He had come from a meeting at the Justice Department. Remember that?
Yes. And
any investigator would say, wait a minute, who did he meet with in that federal bureaucracy? Get the notes of that meeting. These are public records. Any detective worth his salt, any journalist worth his salt could investigate the story and get some conclusions for us. I mean, I only fictionalize it, Gina, because I'm not a journalist. I'm a commentator. It's two different things. Gina, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. All fiction, not based upon anything real. Nothing in it is real. When I come back, more stories, more music, more rock and roll, and a very big treat. We have a very, very big treat for you at 34. A really big treat for you on the show, which is an interview I did with on WOR before my show with Governor Patterson. Left, right, you'll see what we talked about right here on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So I was telling you that the mysterious death of former Pentagon official Jack Wheeler so disturbed me that I fictionalized it in my book, Abuse of Power. It's one of the elements of the book. It's not the whole book. And we just did a search for any story about this Wheeler death. It's amazing to me that this former Pentagon official and a West Point graduate at that would be murdered like this, thrown into a dumpster, and there's no follow-up. Listen to the story. The last thing we could find was from 5/11/2011. Widow of Pentagon's Wheeler craves answers on his mysterious death. If former Pentagon official Jack Wheeler was killed in a robbery, why didn't the murderer take his vintage Rolex watch and gold West Point ring? And if Wheeler was targeted by an assassin trying to make it look like a robbery, why would the killer leave behind items a thief would be likely to take? Very good questions. Those questions involving previously undisclosed details of the unsolved slaying tug hard at Wheeler's widow and grown son. No one outside of the official investigation knows more about the case, and no one is more frustrated by what remains unknown. There are a lot of unsolved questions, says Catherine Kleiss, 67, Wheeler's wife of the past 13 years. This is a man who created the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. He served in jobs that gave him access to major league government secrets, including a stint from 05 to 08 as a top assistant to the Secretary of the Air Force. So, do you believe Wheeler was killed in a robbery, or do you think he was executed? My theory is he was targeted. My theory is that the government is covering this up. My theory is the government media complex will not permit anyone to get close to this story. And what's interesting is that Wheeler had characteristics of Asperger's syndrome,
which I wrote into the novel again as a symptom that Jack Hatfield has, because I was so impressed with the fact that people can have Asperger's and function quite at quite a high level. So anyway, that's a side story, you know. I want to ask you something. We know that Obama was elected because of great amounts of money that came from foreign sources and others, and that he excited people with his hope message, which turned out to be hokum. But he also used social networking to motivate voters, right? And we know that many of the rioters in America are using social networking. We know that the Arab Spring, which is really the Arab Winter, was motivated originally by social networking. I just had an idea, which I've never seen enacted before. What if I asked you to use social networking to meet like-minded people by sending out a quick, you know, text message or tweet people on your network or your Facebook network and say, meet me at the Barnes & Noble bookstore 7 o'clock on Friday night with a copy of Abuse of Power? I mean, what would happen? Do you think that would be a novelty? It's an amazing concept. I've never even thought of it till a second, okay? Albany, New York. Frank, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mr. Savage. I got three reasons that the guy could have been killed. One, he could have been given in excess to women and wine and had loose lips, so some say as a la John Kennedy. Two, he could have been a double agent because we've heard that story before. And three, he could have found out something in the pursuit of a direct order of research that they never dreamed he was smart enough to even find out, which is kind of like what you're saying. And
well, look, but here's the thing. But Frank, here's what bothers me. Here is a man that is as prominent as you can get. His body is tumbles out of a trash truck at a Wilmington landfill, and the American media drops the story. Doesn't that chill you to the bone?
Well, it chills me to the bone, but like you say, when we hear things like they say it's going to rain, they say it's going to snow, who are they? The intangible they. The intangible they, as you're saying, I think, gets the word across somehow. The ones who control the dice. The intangible they, as I call it.
Yeah. Are you in ex-police work or currently?
Believe it or not, no. I have a very analytical mind. I have attention deficit, and I think in threads, like you.
Uh-huh. Very. Hey, say that. Tell me that again. You have ADD, and you think in threads. How does that work? I'm curious.
Well, when I talk, even when I'm talking on a talk show, I can want to talk to you about something, and then you could say something, and then I want to say something else, and that spurns something else, and that spurns something else. Kind of like, you know those trailers that go across the stock channel? You can see, like, the stocks going across in a straight line?
Yeah, but what you're saying is stream of consciousness thinking. I mean, I use that in my radio show. I've used it all my life. My mind operates exactly the same way. Does that mean I have ADD, or it means that I think that way?
Well, you're given to creative thinking. I mean, things that don't fit socially, basically today in society, things that don't produce money, they have a tendency to cause some kind of a disease. Like you said one time, if they gave everybody medication, who's going to write the great books and the sad songs? Nobody.
Well, Obama, his mantra must be see something, tax something. He thinks critically as well. But you're right. In other words, you keep drugging children when they have an emotion. Who is going to write the sad song? Nobody.
Yeah.
Because they made sadness a disease. It's the same way the medical establishment made giving birth a disease. Once they started to treat childbirth as an illness and they treated women as patients rather than women giving birth, that's what changed the whole concept of childbirth in America. I mean, compare that with the image of the traditional woman who is working in a rice field who delivers a baby in the midst of work without pain. How does that compute?
Hey, I wanted to say something to you. I'm thinking in a thread now. You talk about women, the role, bearing kids, you know. Yeah, to totally change gears, this whole thing about this human papillomavirus, right? I know you know about that. You know, that's basically, I call that, well, I can't say it on the radio because it's basically, I don't know, I'm sure you know, but like human, male sperm is a carcinogen, but a woman develops an antibody to it with the same partner.
No. Male sperm is not a carcinogen. Male sperm is an antigen to a woman. It's not the same thing as a carcinogen. But male sperm is perceived by a woman's body as an antigen, as a foreign invader.
Okay, but why do you think that the high incidence of cervical cancer on women under the age between 18 and 23 years old have had in excess of 6 sexual partners by the time they were 17.
Well, right. Of course, it's because your mother was right. Sex is dirty. That's the answer.
I have a theory.
Because the human body is not made for multiple sex partners, despite what some of the inhabitants of San Francisco would like you to believe. The human body was not designed for multiple sex partners at all. It was not designed that way. In other words, the body gets overwhelmed. Every sexual partner presents a unique assault upon our body. It may not seem that way, but the body is actually reacting to that sexual intercourse as though it's an invader, believe it or not, and it has to adjust to it, okay? But if you overwhelm your body with multiple sex partners, your body's defenses become diminished and you open yourself up to various and sundry illnesses. That would be my theory.
That's right. Plus, and I take it a step further, nature interprets you as a rogue and you get a disease because you're not good for the species as a whole. Well, I got one more thread. Anything you want to know about the old neighborhood? My mom still lives there.
Where? We're in the Bronx?
No, Fresh Meadows.
Here's my answer about Fresh Meadows, Queens. It's no longer fresh, and there's no meadows.
Well, let me tell you one better. They took.
You're better than me. You can't stop. You're like Robert De Niro. You're like a Robert De Niro character without the white beard. I'm sending you a book. Can you read anymore with the ADD you have? If I send you Abuse of Power, you promise you'll read it?
Yeah, can I tell you one more thing?
No, you can't say any more. I tell the jokes. Stay on the line. I'm going to send you. I got exhausted from him. The guy's better than me. His stream of consciousness beats mine. I mean, it was like one bang, boom, bing. He was like Henny Youngman with ideas. Is that funny? I thought it was funny. I got relieved that he got off the air already. I was having a sweat from it. He didn't really have ADD. He had a fatty DHS. FBI. Everyone has an illness. Indiana, Carla, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. My grandson, who is 13, absolutely loves listening to your show. And when he heard you had a new book out, that's the first thing he says, I want to read this book. And my question is, would it be an appropriate book for him?
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up on men magazines. I did. I grew up reading men magazines like Argosy that my father had and things like that. I was a former Boy Scout, so I always liked the masculine view of things. And I think this book reflects a bit of that Hemingway-esque mentality. There's really no dirty words in here. There are two lovemaking scenes, but if you're skittish about him reading those, I mean, there's nothing evil about that. Other than that, I wouldn't recommend that you fear it in any way.
Well, very good. He really enjoys your show, so thank you.
Maybe I could put out an R-rated version of Abuse of Power and take out those two or three paragraphs. Let me send you a copy of Abuse of Power. I didn't even think of children. I didn't even think children are allowed to read novels anymore. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. My website is michaelsavage.com. And whatever you want to talk about, I'll talk about, you know, the news. And I don't want to lose the big news story of the day. The big news story of the day is the big upset victory in Queens, Brooklyn, New York, in Congwiener's seat. This district was a Lib Dem since 1923. It went to a Republican. It should be front page screaming bold headlines across America if we still had an independent press. Instead, it's been buried. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Let's take the callers now. Anywhere you are in America, we will give you a free copy of Abuse of Power today and tomorrow and Friday if you get on the air. Sacramento Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, your living fiction's tour de force.
Mm-hmm.
We had an opportunity to go look for your book yesterday, and after much, much work and cajoling of a nice little young clerk in a large chain store, he pointed me to the back of the store, the back corner of the store, where I found it stacked on the floor right next to Michael Moore's latest home.
So, well, hold on a minute. Was this a major league chain like Barnes & Noble?
It is Barnes & Noble. And it was
That clerk should be fired because the publisher paid for upfront placement day one. So I want you to go back to the store and get the clerk's name and send it to me. I'll make sure that clerk doesn't have a job tomorrow. How's that? But I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power. You know, I take no prisoners when it comes to survival. Let me tell you that right now. I didn't get where I am by being a nice guy. I'm not a nice guy. I may be a compassionate person, but don't confuse me with a patsy. And if someone's going to try and step on me, I'll step on them first. I want the name of that clerk, and I'm going to make sure that clerk is thrown out on his keister. He doesn't belong in that store. He shouldn't work for a great chain like Barnes & Noble. He should go work for one of the communist Leninist bookstores in San Francisco that sell nothing but anti-American garbage. Elaine in Tennessee, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Michael. I'm so honored and so nervous.
Don't be nervous. Make believe you're speaking to your long-lost uncle. What's on your mind?
Okay, Uncle. I want to thank you for being my voice. And as far as women go, I know you have a lot of women listeners.
No, I have 38 women listeners around America, 38
no,
Savagettes. You're one of the 38.
No, we women appreciate honesty in men.
Now, well, I do open myself up pretty well on this show, and I think that's what the audience appreciates. You know, you can't do this for very long and be too guarded. And if you're going to hide an awful lot about yourself, I don't think people want to listen to you after a while. A free copy goes out to you, Elaine. Thank you very much for listening and calling with that kind word. In plain English, what is my motto? Borders, language, culture. What does it mean? Close the borders. Make English the official language in all ballots and in all government publications. Only English, not Spanish, not Hindi, not Portuguese, not German, not Polish. English only. Borders, language, culture. If I ran on that campaign, I could sweep the power in any office in this country. But I don't want to be in politics. I want to be on the radio where I have far more influence with far fewer strings attached. Let me put it to you that way. I can speak to you in an unfettered manner. I can get my ideas out in an unfettered manner. It is true that we're losing. There is no question we're losing we lost the culture wars, and there's no question that we've lost the political wars. We have, for the first time in American history, a naked Marxist in the White House, and he is getting away with it. And that is because the media will not call him out on his Marxist policies. I wrote the nonfiction book, Trickle Up Poverty. I tried to tell you what was coming. I said he was going to assault the middle class. Was I wrong? Was I wrong? I told you Obama was pointedly attacking the middle class. And the reason I said it is because I've studied Marxists for years. They hate the bourgeoisie. What's the bourgeoisie? A fancy word for a middle class. What's the middle class today? The Tea Party. That's why they are attacking you. They want the middle class to shrink. And that is because in a true Leninist society, there are two classes. There is the Untermensch, the person without rights, the person without property, and then there is the ruling class, the government workers. That's exactly the society that Obama envisions and is enacting in this country. Okay, did I say it for you? Did I lay it out for you? Do I give your ideas reason? Do I give wings to your thoughts? That's exactly what I do, and that's exactly how I see things. New York WOR, Kathy, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I have to tell you a little story. Yesterday morning, I was out good and early, and I went to one of those big chain stores where you buy stuff in bulk. So I headed down towards the book department, and I was looking around to see if I'd see your book. And I couldn't find it. So I went round to the side, and you were buried in behind Mr. Cheney.
Yeah.
So I looked around at the store, and there wasn't many people around because it was early.
Oh, you got to tell me in 30 seconds or less. So what did your good old Irish spirit do?
I struck you from the back and I pushed Mr. Cheney.
God bless you. Yes, the Irish. God bless the Irish, Kathy. You moved my book where it belongs up front. What was it, in a Target store?
No, it was in BJ's.
Oh, good for you. Well, I'm sending you a free copy for being such a fighting Irish. 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about the news of the day. We're talking about my novel, Abuse of Power, rising up the charts. It's going to be on the bestseller list next week. And when I come back, an interview I did earlier with Governor Patterson of New York on WOR.
Savage. I am joined by the individual who takes these airwaves when I leave them now at WR at 6 p.m. He's on from 6 to 8 p.m. right here in the local market of WOR. He is, of course, a syndicated media star, but also a best-selling author who's out with a new book, Abuse of Power. This is the story of a well-known and well-informed journalist who is basically thrown off the air by a left-wing media watch group's protests and is in seeming unknown at this point, or little known, when he uncovers a plot that takes him to a lot of adventures in England and France and other places, winding up back in, I believe, San Francisco. Is that right, Michael Savage?
It is. It's San Francisco, the land of the cable car, the homeless bum, wonderful food in North Beach, and all sorts of other great sites out here. That's where I live, David, and it's a pleasure to have you have me on your show. This is amazing. You've been on only a week, and I'm one of your guests. It's a lot of fun. Abuse of Power has taken off like crazy, which is a big step for me to go from nonfiction and politics to a novel.
And that's what actually surprised me, Michael. I was walking through the halls the other day. It was right after my show, and you were on with your listeners. And I was about to go in a meeting. I never got to hear the end of what you said. So I thought maybe you'd share it with the WOR listeners right now. You were asking the audience to please buy this book. You thought that this book was as important to you as anything else you've done. And I was wondering why you felt that way, because you've done a lot of things, albeit them controversial, but have really inured to your benefit.
Well, if you're not controversial, you're not alive in this world of polarization. Obviously, whether you're the president or the anti-president or the would-be president, you're controversial. And the reason I went into fiction, David, is really simple. I think that the world being flooded with opinion, world being flooded with nonfiction books, is a great thing. But, you know, a lot of people who are into the right wing, or if you want to put it that way, or family values, if you want to put it that way, who complain constantly about the low level of movies that are coming out, the F words, the B words. If they're not going to go out and read a novel, I don't have one F word in the novel. It's already taken off as a bestseller. I don't think you need to go to S and B and F in a novel to have people enjoy reading it. You know what I mean? So I wanted to change the imagery. I hope it becomes a movie. I hope people understand that people who are conservatives also read and write fiction. I've been, reading and writing. Yeah, that's about it. I mean,
I'm sorry. Interesting you say that, Michael, because when I was a kid and I listened to books, I listened to the book The Caine Mutiny, when I was about 13 years of age.
Oh.
And my father made a comment about the book, and he said there were no curse words in the book. But I remembered scenes where, the way I remembered them, there must have been cursing going on. But Herman Wouk, the author, was able to depict that without actually having to, poison the mind of a young teenager with a cacophony of curse words.
Well, right, and you and I both know that the media landscape is filled with the F. You turn on HBO or Showtime, you see some wonderful programs, highly produced, well-directed, well-acted, but the level of vulgarity turns me off. It's unnecessary. I mean, you can get people's attention without it. So that's one element of it. I mean, of course there are politics in my book, and it's from my perspective, my side of the aisle, so to speak. But, David, I have to say, this is very unusual. In Abuse of Power, one of my heroes is a Muslim woman who lost her brother to the fanatics in her religion. And she works against the hand of Allah in this book. I think it's very important for people to know that I don't demonize an entire religion or entire race. I never have, I never will. But, of course, I'm smeared, and people don't understand me. But the Muslim woman, I didn't pick her just to pander to Muslims. I did it because I keep repeating on my radio show, the number one victim group for the fanatics in Al-Qaeda or the other crazy groups are the middle of the road Muslims who just want to go and pray and raise their families and be left alone. More of them have died from Al-Qaeda than have Christians and Jews put together. People don't understand that. But I have friends from Morocco and Algeria who have told me this.
We're talking with Savage. Michael Savage, that is, from the Savage Nation. And he joins us on WR News Talk Radio 710. One of the things that many people may not really know about you is that you do have an ideology that is your own, and it conflicts often with other conservatives. The other day, you were expressing great remorse at the conduct of some presidential candidates, including the current front runner, Governor Rick Perry of Texas. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think Perry's been unfairly lionized and unfairly demonized, to be very frank with you. I would prefer Perry over Obama for a number of reasons. I know he's not a true hardcore conservative from the point of view that I am, and what I think needs to be done to save our nation, borders, language, and culture have been the motto of my radio show for years. I have liberals who agree with me. It's a strange phenomenon. I know heavy-duty, older, pot-smoking liberals who say, you know, Mike, I agree with you on borders, language, and culture. So it's not so much that motto is offensive as it is it's very, very poorly understood. But having said all that, Perry really is an open borders guy in Texas. He's not really good on the borders. He is very good on jobs. He's very good on other issues. He is a former Democrat. He ran Al Gore's campaign in Texas, which I don't hold against him. I know the world of politics requires having strange bedfellows, so to speak. During the Dubai ports controversy, Governor, a few years ago, which I certainly opposed the folks in Dubai taking over port security in New York and elsewhere, I enlisted Charles Schumer, of all people. He came on this show, right on WOR. Schumer did. And we agreed that the people from Dubai should not get the contract to run our port security. So you, of all people, as an ex-governor, would understand it better than I do. You have to compromise in politics to survive. Otherwise, you're going to wind up with two tin cans and a string, so to speak.
Yeah, that is what happened to me.
Very funny. I think you have more than two. I mean, you have 50,000 watts, not two tin cans and a string.
Well, what I would say, well, this was before WOR kindly welcomed me here. Why do you think, Michael, because you do have such an independent point of view, you fight with conservatives, you even have some nicknames for some of the other conservative talk show hosts that are really quite facetious. Why do you feel you've been castigated and in many ways categorized?
Well, I can't say because I get under people's skin, which is my job. I mean, if we don't get under people's skin in the media, we won't last too long. Now, if you do it simply for effect too often, people will get onto that and they won't listen to you. But if you do it because you actually believe in what you're saying and you're doing it to provoke the other side into a dialogue rather than into straight out hatred, that's another story. And I think people have come to understand I really believe in what I say, number one. And number two, I think that we need to dialogue with each other. At the end of the day, what's missing in America is dialogue, dialogue, dialogue. By demonizing each other, we're letting our common enemy our common enemies encircle us, and that's what worries me, is our political system, our media system is so broken and so into left, right, Republican, conservative, blah, 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 that we're forgetting that there are real-world enemies out there that are taking us to the cleaners.
Well, my dream, Michael, as a new talk show host, and you know, it's a new career for me, and I haven't done this before, is to try to create a forum where people of diametrically opposite points of view will listen and will also call. Because I think what's happened is that talk radio has almost evolved into bunker mentality. Either you're on the former Air America screaming about people who are millionaires that need to pay taxes, or you're on another different agenda, you know, and all you do all day is to try to think of something. President Obama stepped on an ant today. It just shows you how much he doesn't care about people or animals.
He doesn't have
even
to
insects.
Step on an ant. Governor, he doesn't have to step on an ant. Take a look at what happened in Wiener's former district. This is way beyond Obama now. I mean, you know, we can talk about politics and focus on that situation there.
Well, please do. I'd like to hear what you think of the results.
I mean, here's a district that's been in Democrat hands since 1923. Wiener had it. He abused his power. He made a fool of himself. It wasn't that he committed such a great felony, and I've said that. I'm a sexual libertarian, incidentally. I truly don't care what people do sexually as long as they leave children out of it. That's been my position.
The funny thing is, Michael's, it's the first scandal I think I ever heard of where somebody had to resign over a sex scandal and, as far as we know, didn't have any sex except for one occasion because
well, it just shows you what a schmuck.
it just shows you what a schmuck the guy is. He didn't even get anything out of it. But having said all that, to see a Republican come in to a Democrat district that's been Democrat since 1920 and take over the district is astonishing. Whether it's a mandate on Israel or a mandate on Obama, I don't know yet. I think it's more Israel than Obama, incidentally. That's my personal feeling, and I wouldn't take that one and say, aha, Obama's finished, because I've said this on my own show. Don't underestimate this machine under Axelrod, and don't jump to the presidential election of 2012 so fast, because I don't underestimate President Obama. Believe me, I don't like any of his policies, but I don't underestimate him. I'll tell you that.
Well, here's an area where you and I, who probably have far, 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 far more disagreements than agreements, I still feel that in the mythology of the presidency, once someone becomes a president, like Jimmy Carter, he floundered, he had the problems in Iran, he had the problems locally with the economy, but Ronald Reagan beat him, but Ronald Reagan was an incredible communicator. He had a humility about him. He was able to channel the fears and anxieties of Americans, tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev, things that Jimmy Carter could never actually say. They say Jimmy Carter stayed up all night so he could impress the cabinet in the morning. Ronald Reagan went to bed early and told the cabinet, it better be done or I'm going to get rid of people. So It's a leadership issue. And if somebody doesn't step forward from the Republican Party and act like a leader and not the master of a teleprompter, I don't think they can beat President Obama. What do you think?
Well, Obama's the master of the teleprompter. He's not the master of the people, and his policies are
just... No, but see, what I'm saying, Michael, is even if, as the master of the teleprompter, once you get elected, it's going to take something to get you out, is my point.
Well, okay, we could argue about this from today until tomorrow. Obama has been very bad on Israel, and that's why the Jewish people of... Wiener's district threw him out. That's the best I can make of it. I mean, I've heard gay marriage was an issue amongst the Orthodox Jews, but I think the bigger issue was Obama's tepid support or lack of support for Israel. And I know your time is very short, but I must tell you that my novel, Abuse of Power, is really about the abuse of power that comes from all levels of power.
Well,
and how it affects.
That's what I want to ask you. It's great to have a guest that does this, so they help you lead into the revenue-generating part of the program. But tell us, you've moved to fiction. You want a message to be sent from Michael Savage, often misunderstood. Yeah. If people came away with what view of this book, would you feel that the effort was a real success?
You mean what should they take away from it? That one man can make a difference, number one. That the extremists who want to destroy us have not gone away, and they will try another 9/11, and that all of us must be vigilant, and that we must be very careful in demonizing we conservatives as being fanatics or fascists simply because we love America. And Jack Hatfield is a man who's demonized, fights back, and finds out that he was demonized not so much by a single group, but this plot will show that the conspiracy, in this case, goes all the way up to a U.S. senator who's in bed with the Al-Qaeda representative in this book, which is the Hand of Allah. But, you know, aside from all of that, Governor, it's actually a very good story. It reads very well. It's fast-paced. It even has some sex scenes in it that are not pornographic. That's the part I like best.
Oh, so then congressional people could read it and hold their jobs.
Yes, and also we learn that conservatives also do actually have know how to make love. I mean, we don't just wrap ourselves in the flag.
So in 37 minutes and 21 seconds, the man you're hearing right now will take the airwaves on WR at 6 o'clock following me as the host of the Savage Nation. And Michael, just one last question. The main character, how much of that is you speaking to us through that voice?
Well, he lives aboard a boat. I don't, but I have the boat he lives aboard. He has a 10-pound poodle named Eddie. I have a 10-pound poodle named Teddy. I was not a former war correspondent, but there are similarities in viewpoint, if not in activities. There are pieces of me as the author in several of the characters. But I do try to project some of my political views through the characters. But, Governor, truthfully, if it was simply a platform to express politics, it wouldn't go and it wouldn't have sold. People don't want to read that. They're really buying it for enjoyment and entertainment, which comes right back to talk radio. I keep telling people in the business,
You know, AM radio primarily is an entertainment medium. Of course you have to believe in what you're saying, as you know. But if you're not entertaining, people are not going to listen to the show for very long.
Well, Michael Savage, host of The Savage Nation, best-selling author, as controversial as they come, even within what would be considered his own mindset, thanks for taking a few minutes out in the preparation of your show to talk to me. You gave me some interesting advice Friday before Labor Day weekend.
No, I did not.
It was not
aimed at Governor Patterson, because I think you know what you're doing. Believe me, I think you're going to do very well here on this station.
Well, what you actually said, it might not have been advice, but maybe I took it as such, that you really have to devote as much of yourself as you can to the show. There aren't many other things you can do when you try to do talk radio.
No, I can't. I can't. It's, I eat, sleep, and drink it. And a lot of people come into this business think they could just toss off a show and go about their merry business, and they often can't. It's very hard to do. But that's the whole story. Abuse of Power, good novel.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back right after this.
The Obama doctrine, see something, tax something. By the way, if you're listening to the show, tell me tomorrow who steals it first. See something, tax something, the Obama doctrine. Anyhow, I played that interview with former Governor Patterson, a liberal Democrat from New York, and I thought it was very interesting, some of the questions he asked. You got to remember, the man is legally blind, so he sees things, shall I say, differently than those of us who are not vision impaired see the world. And he hears things differently. What I noticed was he said something in the middle of that interview that caught my attention the first time around when he said, "You're listening to Savage." He actually picked up on the sound of one of the promos for the show, or one of the breaks, they say, that they go, "Savage," you know, and he picked up on it because the man is hearing oriented, right? It was a very interesting, I thought it was a very good interview. Rock in New York, fire away on the Jack Wheeler murder. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm a special operator, Vietnam veteran. I heard you talking just a few minutes ago. I want to know if you could tell me how I can help you, how I can help find out what happened to Jack.
Well, I don't know. I mean, who's doing the investigation? His widow, we just printed up an article. His widow is screaming out for help, Ryan. I'm sorry, Rock. Why doesn't the VFW ask why the government has buried the investigation about Jack Wheeler?
I can't answer that one. I don't.
But, Rock, what I would say is you should go to your veteran friends and email them. And I think there should be a monster emailing campaign around the country that's way beyond one man. Because if I started this campaign, I wouldn't last too long, Rock. I'll tell you, I'd wind up in a dumpster as well. But if millions of veterans started emailing each other saying, who killed Jack Wheeler? Why is the government covering up the death of Jack Wheeler? I think some wheels would be turned into motion. We might get an answer.
Roger that, sir. I believe you.
Thank you. But, Rock, listen, you understand what I just said in its totality, I'm sure. I will gladly send you a copy of my novel, Abuse of Power, which only touches upon this character in a fictional way, only briefly. You know, I don't know what happened to him. I can only guess that he was killed because he stepped on some toes at the very high levels of government, or is about to blow the whistle on somebody inside the government who is playing for the other team. You know, anything is possible. You understand that. But for a man of this caliber to disappear and be unceremoniously killed like that, and for the American media to ignore it, shows you what a sorry state this nation has come to with regard to the American media. Isn't it strange? Where are the journalists? Where are the journalists who smear all of us in talk radio? Are there any left? This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back right here on your local affiliate.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thank you. Big news of the day, the most Democrat-controlled seat in America is Brooklyn, Queens, New York. They've held this congressional seat since the 1923 period. It was the one held by Congressman Weiner, who got thrown out for exhibiting himself via the Internet. An election was held yesterday, and a Republican won. And it's not in your newspaper. It's not on CNN. It's not on MSNBC. You talk about abuse of power. You talk about propaganda. Well, anyway, that's a big story. And the reason that the Dems lost is because of Obama's fiscal policies and because the Dems are fed up with the bashing of Israel by Obama, the most Israel-hating president in American history. Shall I say the most pro-Muslim Muslim president in American history? Yes, it's all related to my novel, Abuse of Power, in one way or the other. All roads lead back to abuse of power, either by Obama or the Democrat machine, or by the newspaper media complex. Incidentally, Savage introduces a new hero to battle Islamo-fascists in my new thriller called Abuse of Power, and it's all on michaelsavage.com. Canadians see irreconcilable differences between Islam and the West. A poll of Canadians, liberal Canadians, showed 56% of Canadians feel that differences with Muslims cannot be overcome. Huh. Officials say threat on 9/11 anniversary is unresolved. Really? They don't know who did it or why, but they certainly panicked America. I guess they have to justify the budgets the way some firemen do by setting fires. Obama stacks courts with non-whites and women. More than 70% of confirmed nominees to federal courts for lifetime jobs by Obama were so-called non-traditional appointees, meaning anyone but a white male. Unbelievable what a man this thing is. Carter, the Jew hater, backs a Palestinian state. Columbia haters, Columbia students to dine with Iran's Hitler. In Libya, as I warned you, the main legislation source will be the in Islam, the main legislation source will be Sharia law. Israel surrounded as Arab Spring turns darker. No kidding. Who told you about it? Who told you about it? 1.75 private sector workers per Social Security recipient. You hear this? Can you believe what's going on in this country? Kiss America goodbye. 1-800-449-8255. Banned in Britain headquarters. The outrage continues. It's all on michaelsavage.com. Feinstein says her treasurer looted her campaign funds. Really, Diane? Sure, you knew nothing about it. Any more than the Chinese man who had an eel enter his penis didn't know why it happened. Also in the news on michaelsavage.com, a Catholic school upsets foe with We've Got Jesus chant. One of the top Catholic football programs in the nation is finding itself in hot water after members of its students' fan section directed chants of We've Got Jesus at opponents in a heated intra-city rivalry game on Friday night in Ohio. Well, isn't that interesting? San Francisco explores bird-safe building standards. I guess they could take down the buildings and just put up tents that'll be safe for birds. Could robots replace journalists? Haven't they already? Haven't they already replaced them? California may send thousands of female prisoners home. Isn't that nice to be reunited with their family? Isn't that nice? Because they're all such good women. DOE backs $90 million loan to build another solar power plant, even though the last green business is under indictment and investigation by the FBI. Just shows you, some things never change. These are some of the stories that made it to michaelsavage.com. There was another story that caught my eye that's stunning, and it is about the Cherokee tribe saying they do not want to grant citizenship to freed slaves who have been members of the Cherokee tribe since the Civil War. What I learned in reading this story, the Cherokee Indians say we are free to oust blacks from our tribe. The U.S. government is forcing the second largest Indian tribe to recognize as citizens 2,800 descendants of slaves that were held by Cherokees. You talk about hypocrisy. I mean, this story has hypocrisy going both ways, incidentally. You know what I'm saying? Here we have the U.S. government with their sanctimoniousness about minorities and minority rights and American Indian rights. Now they're telling the American Indians what they should do. On the other hand, the fact of the matter is these 2,800 African Americans are in fact Cherokee citizens, according to what I can read, because they've been part of the tribe ever since the Civil War, when the Cherokees, who had been relocated to Oklahoma, actually fought on the side of the South. People don't know that. See, that's a little hidden fact of the Civil War. The Cherokees fought with the South against the North in the Civil War. And then a treaty was signed in 1866 guaranteeing tribal citizenship for the freed black slaves. But now things have changed. And 1866, they were a Cherokee citizen. 2011, they told the blacks that they're not citizens. Attorneys in a federal lawsuit in Washington are asking a judge to restore voting rights for the ousted Cherokee freed slaves in time for the September 24th tribal election for principal chief. Obviously, the federal government wants a certain principal chief installed as their stooge on the reservation. That's really what it comes down to, irrespective of right and wrong. These are amazing stories. I mean, we're living through very interesting times when you have a communist in the White House who hates America, in my opinion, and has a vendetta towards white males. It's astounding to see what's going on in this country. That's why I say kiss America goodbye. There are many, many other stories to focus on, but let's not lose sight of the big one, which is that the guaranteed Democrat seat in Brooklyn, Queens, that was up for grabs after Weiner got wanged out of office because of exposing himself, has now gone to a Republican. It's a monster story, and it is the Jewish vote that did it there, but it's also Obama's policies. The Democrats are spinning it another way. They're saying this is a very difficult district for Democrats, even though Dems have held a seat there since 1923. Can you believe this? Can you believe what's going on? I mean, Obama's the most unpopular president in American history. He should be impeached. If he had any dignity, he would leave office and turn it over to Biden. As bad as Biden is, he's more reliable as an American than this imposter. You know what I'm saying? Unbelievable. I'll take a leftist over a fanatic communist. They're not exactly the same thing. Flight-carrying Justice Ginsburg evacuated at Dulles. We don't know it's because of what she ate for lunch, but we'll be following that story. Latest jobs plan includes a tax on soup kitchens. You know, see something, say something from DHS could become see something and tax it. See something, tax something is the new Obama policy. You see anything move, tax it. If you see something moving, tax it. Anything with a pulse, tax it.
Play the clip.
You don't deserve to keep all of it. And
why?
It's not a question of deserving, because what government is those things that we decide to do together. And there are many things that we decide to do together.
How much?
I think you need to pay your fair share in order to do the things that we've decided are national priorities.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Obama is raffling a dinner with himself for cash. I don't know whether this is abuse of power or self-abuse of power. You know, is this self-abuse of power, Beowulf? To raffle yourself off for cash as president? I think that would be... Wait, no. I mean, this is astoundingly low class. I mean, but we know what we have here. Now we're hearing a warning that the European Union could break apart. Can you imagine? Anyway, today is D-Day plus one for Abuse of Power, my new novel, which is a thriller that's taking off on the charts. It's actually... It's number three amongst fiction hardcover. It's about number 23 in overall books, but it's become number three in fiction hardcover. So I suggest you rush out and get your copy today. Here it is. Obama sends out creepy email and says, "Sometime soon, can we meet for dinner?" Oh, my God. That's Barack Obama's reelection campaign? Amazing. All this and more on today's Savage Nation.
Savage.
Brian in Boston, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I'm one of those four-fifths human beings that grew up in Ireland, specifically the north of Ireland, Belfast, during the 40-year war against the tyranny of Britain.
Yes.
I'm kind of happy tonight. I'm happy that America can see what lies ahead of them if they go down the socialist path that has wrecked not only the British Isles, but also Europe.
It has, Brian. Now, Brian, didn't the wonderful Brits, the humane, wonderful Brits, use plastic bullets and water cannon on the Irish?
They used a lot more than that, Michael. I grew up in the north of Ireland with a helicopter 24 hours a day hovering over my home. My younger brother was tortured with cigarette butts to his testicles.
Oh, jeez.
There were thousands upon thousands of young men who were arrested on Operation Motorman and imprisoned in a concentration camp called Long Kesh in the north of Ireland at the hands of the tyranny of the British Empire.
Well, Lee, I'm an amateur student of history. I know about the black and tan gangs that tortured your people as well. But what amazes me is that the very English who will use guns, who did use guns and water cannons and bullets on, even plastic bullets, on your people won't use them against these vermin in the streets of England.
Because they don't consider us part of the British Empire.
Well, that's right, and you're four-fifths human to them, right, Brian?
There are two issues, Michael. One is...
So if the Irish are four-fifths human to the British, and I'm not even allowed in England, you're at least allowed to go to London, so I'm not even 50% human, right?
Yeah, I believe that it's a travesty of justice. It's a violation of basic human rights that you have been refused entry into the British Empire.
Well, Brian, I swear to God, I swear to my audience and everyone listening to the show, Irish and non-Irish alike, that God willing, when I get total, control over my life and over my everything else, my health and this and that, I intend to go to Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, which is not part of the United Kingdom. I intend to invite 1,000 or 2,000 of my listeners from around America, and I hope the Irish will join me. I intend to go to the border with England with as many bullhorns as we can get and tell them what we think of them.
Michael, can I say something?
Please.
The people in the north of Ireland are just as Irish as the people in the south. They are still fighting for their freedom because they're still under British rule. And most people don't understand.
Yeah, and we don't hear much about that, though, anymore, do we? What is the situation over there? What actually is going on?
As the last 40... Since I left Ireland in 1977. I was a teacher in the Catholic school system, and there was no future, as there was no future for so many of my friends because there was perpetual unemployment benefits. The British government had a socialist government under the Labour Party had it instituted back in the 60s all the way through to the present day. That's the reason why you're having the riots in England at the present moment, because what they have done to the British people, and not only in England, Scotland, Wales, and the north of Ireland, it is now part and parcel of what is a common practice in the south of Ireland. It's become totally socialized. And what
in other words, they basically made it a dependent class of people who have nothing to live for and no respect for the nation that they live in. You're an educated man, Brian. I remember seeing a film many years ago, I think is The Wind That Moves... What is it? The Wind That Moves? The one about the black and tans, how they brutalized the Irish. You know that film?
The Wind That Shook the Barley, yes.
Is that a factually accurate film?
As best as can be. A better one would be with Liam Neeson in the freedom fighter who established the south of Ireland.
Now, what was that movie? I love Liam Neeson. He's a great actor. I've never seen him in a bad film.
You got me.
I don't really know, but I saw a few good ones that came out about 10 years ago about the Irish fleeing and hiding in New York. Pretty well done. Damn well done. There was another Irish actor who did a great job whose name escapes me. Look, but Brian, this is a tragic situation when you see an entire nation brought to its knees by rabble in the gutter, and the police are told to stand down and do nothing, and you hear the straw man, Cameron, getting up there saying, we will not tolerate it. You can almost laugh at the guy for what he's saying. But my comment, as acid as it was, is unfortunately true, which is that they will not use water cannon or plastic bullets on these vermin. They reserve that for the Irish, who they considered only four-fifths human. And I stand by those words, Brian. I know those resonated with you, which is why you called the show, I'm sure.
Can I say one last thing?
Yes, sir.
Growing up in the north of Ireland under British rule and watching, going through university, being a beneficiary of free education, watching what the Brits were doing to their people, their own people, the Socialist Labour Party of Britain, just a forewarning to Americans. What the Socialist Party in Britain did during the 60s, they put out white papers from 10 Downing Street alerting the British people to the fact that there were not going to be a lot of jobs available, that we were going to go down to a 3 or 4 day work week, and because of that, they were building recreation centers all over the British Isles, which they did, because they knew that the policies that they were going to put in place were going to necessitate that people were not going to be able to have a job. So therefore, they realized that all these people were going to be lying idle. They had to have somewhere for them to go, otherwise they were going to be a problem.
Well, that's the equivalent of the Democrats building night basketball centers here in America, knowing that the youth are uneducated, incapable of anything but playing a basketball and trading in drugs in the basketball centers. Brian, it's a sad day. It is absolutely a sad day. This is nothing to celebrate. I understand the sarcasm in the statement that you made, that you're glad that the world can see the Brits for what they are. But at the end of the day, who really likes to see a civilization crumbling as we are watching this?
Savage.
We're going to speak now with CNBC on-air editor Rick Santelli about the economy. And truthfully, I'm going to ask him, how serious is this economic situation that we're in? And can anything be done about it? Obviously, we're going to talk about this and much more by Rick Santelli. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, great talking to you again.
Do you think we are on the verge of a double-dip recession or even a real depression?
Well, Michael, I don't think I would use the depression term, because I think what we've done to ourselves is we've made the fence around the pasture so tight with regard to accumulating debt with a purpose that was supposed to jumpstart the economy. The debt lasts, the jumpstarting didn't. And I think that we're going to have kind of a rolling, mediocre economy. Whether it's a double dip or not, that chapter hasn't been written. And there used to be a time where America was in control of its destiny. And that isn't so much as true today as it was even just 5 years ago. So I think a lot of whether we go into a double dip or not depends on the outcomes in Europe. Think about it from a global standpoint. You have many countries that are involved in exporting as a major part of their economy. Exporting is interesting on a multitude of levels. The one I'm thinking of in particular is, you know, who are the consumers that are going to buy the products, and how does the notion that customers of Germany, like Greece, like Italy, like Spain, like Portugal, are having their issues, and China is an ongoing debate. Look at how their stock market has behaved for 2011. You know, how is the global slowdown going to affect them, their pricing, the pressures on our own manufacturing and other sectors that compete? So these are open-ended questions. The only thing that isn't open-ended is the notion that we've dug our hole pretty deep, and unlike past periods of contraction in the past, even the distant past like the 30s, we are not the front runner in the global economy, where the next best economy is in a very distant second. Our burrow is really loaded up with saddlebags, and it's going to be tough to maintain a competitive edge.
Okay, so what in your opinion is the major cause of this economic crisis that we're in? Is it just spending more than we're taking in?
Well, I think that there are so many varying little fires in kind of many areas of contention with regard to economic horsepower. It's really a multi-tiered question. As I mentioned, we have the effects of Europe. We have the effects of China, the effects of a hiccup in the globalization process that really is new to many of the players, not only on the scale of the expansion that we witnessed prior to 08, but in terms of kind of the first major global contraction and what it all means, and the overwhelming notion that many believe is, I do, that a bigger pie isn't necessarily a bad thing if it's equitably split up, and if the rules of fairness with regard to things like trade are enforced, or at least the same guidelines are uniform throughout various countries, I think that that's a big deal. I also think that another issue that we need to be concerned with at this point in time is the political landscape, not only in Europe, but in the United States. The powers that be in Europe are going to have a political rat's nest when it comes to their next election cycle. Think Germany and how the German people are going to view the ongoing subsidies to the rest of Europe, and in our country, a very similar situation with the philosophical issues of how do you jumpstart an economy? Is it a government endeavor? Is it enabling the private sector to better create jobs as it always has in the past? These are very open-ended questions.
Can anything be done to turn this economy around?
I think what turns it around is actually not only much easier than many think, it's within reach. Okay? Think jobs. You know, the president gave a big speech last week, and really I think there was a blackout period between the debt ceiling issue and the night of his speech, because in many ways his solutions are, you know, just like that old detergent for laundry commercial, you know, whiter whites, new and improved. It's the same philosophical approach. Now, having said that, what are we really after here? Jobs, okay? The president called his stimulus plan a jobs plan. How do you create jobs? Energy. I look towards the technologies such as fracking. I look at the cost of energy, the cost of gasoline in this country, and even in an economy, arguably a slow, mediocre global economy, we still look at the price of crude in the $90 area. Imagine what it's going to be when we start firing on a few global cylinders. So my answer is simple. There are millions of jobs that could be created in the U.S. based on energy, based on natural gas. These could be brought up to speed quickly. Many of the energy CEOs that we have on CNBC have said this over and over, time and time again, and of course, it would be a big boost to be more self-reliant in the energy space.
How much blame does Bernanke get for this struggling economy?
I don't know if he gets blamed for the economic downturn in the grand scheme of things, meaning what started in our country in the summer of 08, but I do think that the Federal Reserve had regulatory responsibilities that they didn't do a very good job of. Now, having said that, I think your question, Michael, is more in tune with the more recent downturn, and I truly believe that the Fed can take a good chunk of responsibility, not all, mind you, of things like higher commodity prices. Don't call it higher inflation. We get into this economic circular argument. Higher commodity prices have been caused in part by quantitative easing and how that process affects the value of the dollar and various other metrics within the global economy. So I think Mr. Bernanke gets credit for that, and that's not a good thing to get credit for. I also think that his heart's in the right place. I think he's a very moral man in terms of he would like his medicine to cure what ails the economy. But I do think that his medicine hasn't worked in the past, and I don't understand why there is this ongoing notion that whether it's fiscal or monetary, whether it's government or Federal Reserve, that they need to be integral into a proactive solution when there may not be one of those silver bullet solutions. Sometimes you just have to let the flu run its course, and I think many of the programs, whether Ben Bernanke or the administration or Congress have tried to put forth, are, in my opinion, six-day cures for a three-day flu.
Okay, so how serious is this banking crisis?
I think the banking crisis in Europe is more than a banking crisis. I really think it's a sovereign crisis. And, you know, we've gotten to the point now where we're not debating companies going bankrupt like a GM or a Chrysler. We're not necessarily debating about banks like a Credit Agricole or some of the banks that are in the news as potentially having faulty balance sheets and lots of toxic derivatives. We're talking about countries. Now, granted, Greece is a small piece of world GDP. It's a small piece of the European Union. But the contagion issue, the counterparty risk, the fact that some of the sovereign paper of countries, whether it's Italy, whether it's Spain, whether it's Ireland, whether it's Greece, are now being purchased by members and various large banks in Europe and being used as collateral with the ECB, All of these are very hard to quantify in the final chapter, but one thing I feel very convinced of is that market forces are going to push a solution onto the bureaucracy versus the bureaucracy push a solution onto the marketplace.
Rick Santelli, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Michael, great talking to you again. Thanks for having me.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Quote, president's a nice guy. He doesn't have a clue how to get this country working again. Your reaction?
I'm not going to start reacting to Republican rhetoric in a presidential campaign. Let them decide who it is that is going to be their standard bearer, and we'll have more than ample time to have a debate with them.
What do you make of Rick Perry, who is, I guess, the front runner?
Well, he's been the governor of a big state. And, there's no doubt he's a credible candidate, as is Mr. Romney and a whole bunch of other folks.
Tea Party here to stay?
Yeah. We've always had a anti-federal government bent. I do think that the extreme position that you hear that says government has no role to play in growing our economy, that the federal government has no function to play in building a strong middle class, is absolutely wrong. I reject that view.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Eddie, my love.
It is the Savage Nation. And did you ever think you'd live through another year of Obama? But look, I don't want to do politics right now. It's Labor Day weekend. Most normal people are thinking about what they're going to be doing this weekend. They don't really care about the debate and next Tuesday and the NFL and the Obama blinked or the Republicans blinked. I can't even follow it personally, nor do I care. It's just too far ahead. You know what I want to do today? I'm going to read you something. I'm going to read you some titles, and I want you to answer the question. Would you rather I talk about the Keystone pipeline that runs from Canada to Mexico, or Obama, or the electric blue saddle-stitched pants, the fly and the tuna, Symphony Sid story, tough high school geometry teacher with two fingers on his right hand, happy and sad cufflinks, Woodchuck Bill, Fat Pat and Tippy the dog, Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck, Dead Man's Pants, Sam the Butcher, Nutty Friend Who Had a Crazy Mother, Coney Island Wax Figures, Half Man, Half Woman in Long Beach, The Chestnut Man, One Arm Frank, Louie and His Crazed Monkey, The Nympho in Alley Pond Park, Love by the Sewer Plant, Fat Al's Tuna, My Silent Brother, My First Autopsy, My First Dead Body, My First Mortgage, Killing Mice in a Laboratory. Which would you rather I do? Would you rather I read or actually tell you some of these childhood stories, including new ones, that a new one came to me in the middle of the night last night on the Savage Mind. The Savage Receiver Mind was on at 3 in the morning. You know what came to my mind? I was telling you a story yesterday on this show. Remember I said my friend's father was the toughest guy in the crowd, and boys tend to gravitate towards the toughest man in the circle because the tough men are usually the tribal leaders, which is always true. It's always been true, always will be true. Now, tough can mean tough of mind, tough of body. This guy was tough of body and tough of mind, so he led the boys, and I told you that. He was an Upper East Side bar owner when the other guys were petty merchants or had small menial jobs. You know, we were all immigrant families. Somehow he worked his way into opening a slick bar on the Upper East Side, and he was he wore suits. The other guys wore overalls or blue shirts. He wore a white shirt. But nevertheless, they were all in the same social milieu. He never put his nose up in the air. So I was thinking about him last night as I went to sleep. And you know what came to my mind was this. I remember once my friend's mom who was married to this tough guy, took us to his bar. I don't know where she took us, the Ringling Brothers or whatever. And then in the middle of a sunny day, we went into this dark wood-paneled bar in the Upper East Side, and nobody was in there. It was almost like out of a Godfather scene, except the owner, who was this guy, and the bartender, who looked remarkably like the bartender who chokes Fat Clement, not Fat, the other one to death in the garden. It was like a... And we ate dinner in the place. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, it was remembrances of steaks past. When I ate that steak in that bar that he made for me and the other kid, his son, I finally ate steak. I had no idea that the steak I'd been eating in my house, it was like eating a catcher's mitt. I thought steak was supposed to be something you struggled with. I thought steak was something you had to attack like with a saw. This is not an aspersion upon my family, but I mean, we didn't have a lot of money, so I guess we got a cheaper cut of meat, or these guys knew how to tenderize it. But I remember cutting into that steak as long as I live and how tasty and soft it was. I said, I didn't even know this was what steak was supposed to taste like. So it reminded me of the old Buddy Hackett joke, another one, long dead. Who remembers him, right? You remember Buddy Hackett, old Catskill Mountains comedian, but one of the best. He got up once in front of an audience and he said, I never forget when I went to the Army to Fort Dix. He said, all my life, he said, I suffered from indigestion from my mother's food. He said, I ate the Army food and I didn't have indigestion. He said, I went to the doctor. I said, doctor, something's wrong with me. He said, why? He says, I have no gas, no indigestion. I don't feel like puking. What's wrong with me? In other words, he had never eaten a meal before that didn't get him sick. I thought it was funny, but it related to that in a sense of the steak. So, okay, you have the choice. It's your show on the Savage Nation. You want me to do the Keystone Pipeline? You want me to speculate on whether Hillary Clinton will run in the primaries against Obama? You want me to talk about Muslims and the headscarves at the Rye Playland? You want me to talk about Maxine Waters? I don't want to talk about it. I'll take your calls instead on the Savage Nation. Let's start with Arizona, Brent. Brent, thanks for calling me. What city are you in Arizona, Brent?
I'm in a little bit south of Tucson in the town of Green Valley.
Is there a town called Threeson, or is they're not numbered down there?
There's a Three Points.
You see? So what'd you call about, Brent?
The electric saddle stitch pants from your book.
Did you ever hear this story? I mean, did I ever...
Years ago when the book first came out, and I fell over laughing hearing it.
Okay, it's a true story, and I'm actually going to read the electric blue saddle-stitched pants. In the seventh grade, my mother bought me the most beautiful, incredible pants. We didn't have a lot of money, but she knew I wanted these pants really bad. It was the Elvis era, right? Mama Savage saved, and she bought me a pair of electric blue saddle-stitched pants. Well, I wore them to school. I thought I was Elvis himself. Well, on the very first day, a bigger, older kid just happened to be wearing the same exact pants, and naturally, we got into a scuffle. He pushed me down, and my gorgeous Elvis pants were ripped in the knee. I thought it was the end of the world because these were the most expensive, beautiful pants I had ever had in my life. So the rest of the day, I couldn't sit through the classes. Whatever the teacher said, my mind was somewhere else. My heart was pounding. How am I going to tell my mother? How am I going to tell my father? How am I going to tell my mother? So I come home with the pants, hiding the rip under my coat. I said, Ma, I ripped my pants. But she didn't get mad. She said, let me see them. Don't worry about it. I said, you're not going to tell Dad, are you? She said, no, 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 don't worry about it. So all night long, I couldn't sleep. The next day, the women were talking it over, sitting around the little table in that little house in Queens, and they were moving the crumbs around with their bread knives and talking. They decided what to do. They took the pants to a certain tailor, and the word came back. Don't worry, Michael, the pants can be weaved. Now, I didn't know what the pants can be weaved meant. I don't think they do that anymore because clothing has become something different than it was then. We throw everything away. But I knew from that moment on that everything would be good, and it was. The pants were weaved. That's what a mother's for, I guess, to fix everything but a broken heart. And the jobs report's coming out tomorrow, which is, it's all political, it's nonsense jobs report. What can a government do about jobs other than make them up? Make up jobs. I mean, how can they make up jobs? You want to stimulate an economy? Make it easier for business owners. Cut taxes. You don't understand this. You see, many people who are not business owners or business-oriented. You see, I was once a kid and poor, and I didn't understand any of this. So I assumed that the businessman automatically was a thief, and he robbed everybody because that's how I was brainwashed as a child in the communist Queens College. It may as well have been called Communist College rather than Queen's College, because it was filled mainly with emigres who had fled Europe and came here and poisoned the children of Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan, with the City College system, which was infested with communists at the time, as is well established by the Venona papers. But let's put that aside. So I didn't understand how this really worked. The way it really works is this. If you're a business owner and you're strapped with red tape, and you're strapped with city inspectors that come and bother you every 2 minutes, and you're strapped with high taxes, you don't have the money or the inclination to open up another business. So therefore, you're not going to create jobs. If you eliminate the city inspectors who bother you, if you eliminate the red tape or reduce it, you lower the taxes, then the extra money that the businessman owns, he will usually put into expanding his business by opening another store on that level, expanding his product line on that level. And that creates jobs. But you cannot explain that to the federal family. Because if you inspect the federal family under Barack Hussein Obama, who's the big daddy of the federal family, and I guess you'd have to say that Big Sis Napolitano would be the mommy of the family, because she's the mommy figure. They don't understand it because they've never held a job. They've held government positions, which is much different than holding a job.
Savage.